Welcome to this episode of Dialogues with Creators. As we enter our fourth year of podcasting, there are a few guests who have visited with us more than once. For example, Jerry Dry, my colleague at Dalton State, office suite mate, humorist, award-winning teacher, and raconteur. That is not someone who raises raccoons, by the way. David Cady is another. He has chronicled the story of a dangerous religious group centered in Northwest Georgia. Also, Curtis Hill, the pastor of Brainerd Baptist Church, which I attend in Chattanooga, has been with us twice. And today we have number four of revisitors, Ryan Reese. He is an educator and filmmaker. Ryan and I are going to talk about success, overcoming challenges, and next steps to writing careers. Stay tuned. Welcome, Ryan Reese. For the listeners who didn't hear our first podcast 3 years ago, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a local educator in Whitfield County Schools. I've been a teacher for 28 years, and I've had a bit of a diverse background in my academic pursuits. Started as a public school teacher in 1997, some years ago. And in the interim of all of that, I pursued graduate education in professional writing and poetry and creative nonfiction. I have a background in curriculum instruction in one graduate degree in screenwriting for film and television, in another degree pursuit and doctoral studies that are still ongoing as well. I would like to say that I've been an active participant in creative outlets most of my life, everything from theater in early school days that I didn't stay with in high school and college. And I sort of regretted that over the years. I enjoyed acting, but it's just not something that I pursued beyond that point. But I guess the bulk of what I've done has been to teach, to write on the side. I've moved into film production, as you know, and then I've taught and mentored to the best of my ability thousands of students by now. I wish I could give you an accurate number of how many, but for better or worse, I've had a lot of experience with young people, many who are pursuing creative arts and writing, and I still teach, of course, for Dalton State, where you teach, and have been with Dalton State, I guess, at this point, 22 years, if I counted that correctly, both part-time and full-time. And currently, I teach at Northwest High School in Whitfield County Schools, and that's my full-time job, and then writing and filmmaking and other adventures, I suppose, would be kind of what I do on the side.
Okay. And you you actually went to Dalton State, didn't you, for 2 years?
I did. I graduated in 1993 from high school, and I was at Dalton State from 93 to 95 before I transferred to the University of Georgia. So I'm well-rooted in the area, and I consider it my home. It was a blessing to be able to attend Dalton. Of course, at that time, it was Dalton College. And then eventually State College, and it was a great thing to be able to come back and teach there part-time, which led to a full-time tenure-track position, which then I gave up and returned to public school. So it's been an interesting journey, but I love Dalton State for everything that they've contributed over the years to my life, and hopefully I've been able to pay back some of that a little.
Well, I know your students love your class and screenwriting, and I know they love the other ones as well. Before. And there are a lot of things I wanted to talk to you about, but I mostly wanted to start with your film Elation. And because this film is very good, as is noted in the fact that it's won so many awards. And I just have a lot of questions about first how that film came about. It's 30 minutes, right? It's 30 minutes.
It's considered a short film, but it's a long short film. It is right at 30 minutes and 2 seconds, actually, to be precise about it, which it has been beneficial in a lot of ways in terms of short film, but it's been detrimental in some ways in terms of submitting to certain festivals. The definition of short film is usually shorter than 30 minutes. So some festivals are very selective about the length of the short film. So I'm not quite a feature, but I'm not quite a short film that's traditionally 15 or 17 minutes long or shorter. So, we've had to be very selective about the film festivals that we've submitted to. And Film Freeway, which is the platform most short film makers use for those submissions, that platform is really good to give you information about so many festivals, from first year festivals to things that have been established in the industry for so many years. And it's been an interesting process to navigate it, that we've been really lucky or blessed to get that film out and get eyes on it and get a lot of positive feedback and yes, to win a few awards with it too. So
more than a few,
but it has, that film has exceeded expectations, and it has, the old saying goes, it has run its legs, and that is very true. It has been, of course, for all the accolades that it has received, you see those, but you don't see the number of misses at the same time. A lot of rejections and not being recognized in festivals, but everything from the production quality to the acting to the directing and the producing, we've been recognized really in every aspect of filmmaking for that film, which I think is really a testament to the people that I had in place that worked on it. And it was so much more than me being able to do it. If I hadn't met the right people in the right place at the right time, that film would never probably have seen the light of day. I mean, if you're asking, kind of where the film came from or how the process came about, when I was in my doctoral program or MFA program, at the University of Georgia, it's a terminal degree program, but the University of Georgia was responsive to everything that's happening in Georgia with the film industry coming to our state. And they got on board pretty early and created this low residency program in screenwriting. It was something I wanted to do years and years ago when I was a 17, 18-year-old kid in high school, and I was very risk-averse. I still am. I wasn't going to move to New York or L.A. at that time in my life. I still probably wouldn't, frankly. But when the industry came to us, I had an opportunity to go back to graduate school and pursue that degree. And it was a great pursuit. I had a great experience in the program. But I was one of the few students in the program at the time at the University of Georgia who specifically wanted to pursue feature filmmaking and writing feature screenplays. Yeah. And I was working on an adaptation of an Edward Abbey novel for my graduate thesis, essentially, and wanted to adapt it. It was a book that I'd encountered when I was actually a high school student. I had an environmental science teacher who slipped the book to me and said, "Hey, I think this might be something you like." And the book sort of, it resonated with me and it stuck with me for many years. So when I went in, we all had to pitch the idea of what we wanted to do for the major project. I told them I would like to try my hand at adapting the novel, and traditionally, you would get permission of the family or the author before you do that. And because I was a graduate student, the director of the program said, "Well, we're not going to do that. But if you can write a screenplay that seems to be worth its weight in salt or whatever, we'll see about that next step." But the novel itself, which is one of my favorite novels, it was not a bestseller. The name of the book is Black Sun. It was an early Ed Abbey novel. But the exposition of the character really leaves a lot of questions, and it doesn't provide a lot of those answers about how Will Gatlin, who is the protagonist, ends up where he is in that story. And so in the pursuit of writing that feature script and trying to make an introduction to Act One that worked for that story, I created a different story about a professor who had been falsely accused of an interaction with a female student. And that was going to be my springboard to get Will Gatlin in the novel out west working for the Forest Service. But the tone of those pages that I wrote as the exposition really didn't gel with the tone of the rest of the script. Yeah. So I ended up scrapping, I guess at that time it was around 12 pages or so. And I had, good mentors at UGA who said, "This is really good, but tonally it's different But John Strauss, who's one of my mentors in Ramen Theory, who's the other, said, but I think in this 12 pages, you've got something that may be a really sweet, maybe short story or short film. So they said I would take it away from the feature and then just hold on to those pages. And so I did do that. I took the advice, and it was proper advice, and they were absolutely correct about it. But when I finished the program at Georgia, I decided to enroll at Chattanooga State Community College. They have a pathway in professional film and television production, and I had met the director of that program, Chris Willis, who is another great mentor and friend. And I just, you know, I did not have hands-on production experience in front of the camera, behind the camera. And if I had aspirations to direct, which I did at the time, then I felt like I needed to know those things. And so I enrolled in these classes, and it was a great experience. And there's an actor, Dylan Koosman, who was teaching in the program at the time. And we had to write a short script for the class and try to film some scenes or sequences from that. So I took those 12 pages and massaged those 12 pages that I had carried over from the University of Georgia, added some pages to it, fleshed out the narrative, and ended up with a nice little story that was bookended well enough, that had few characters in terms of casting. It wasn't a huge cast. It didn't need to be filmed in too many locations. And anyway, I presented it to the group of students who were the filmmaker students in that program, the other students of the program. And they really were interested in it. They liked what I had written. And I think it was a different experience for them, frankly, because I was a non-traditional student in the program and probably twice the age of most of those students. But they just really took to it, and they wanted to film my script. And, you know, that's really kind of cool that I have the endorsement of a lot of the younger students who were and are just really bright students who want to make good films. And Chris had some connections with a DP, a director of photography or cinematographer, Christian Eves, that you have now met multiple times. And Rachel Bohannon, who ended up directing my short film. And it was just a matter of the right people being in the right place at the right time. And I was able to flesh out the casting. I produced the film, so it was paid for. I did the casting, wardrobing, set design, things that I had no experience doing, but with the right support and the right people working with me. It all came together very well and rather seamlessly, frankly. But with a good DP and a good sound editor and a good director in Rachel, we had everything kind of moving there. And the casting part was really the last thing that we did before we started production of it. And I looked on several of the actor databases, in the Atlanta area, and I found a gentleman, Jim Thompson, who starred in the film as the professor. And it was sometimes you just see and you know. And I saw his picture. I read his bio. I saw his sizzle reel. And I was just like, that's the guy. That's my professor. And I had not spoken to him about it, but I just knew. And so I made contact with Jim first, shared the screenplay with him. He was very excited about it. And he had just finished production of a different short film that had filmed in North Alabama. And he was vlogging while they were on set, and they had some downtime. And as he was just kind of moving the camera around, there was a young lady who was petting a horse and had her head against the horse. And she just had a look that struck me immediately. And I asked Jim, you know, about that actress. And he told me, you know, who it was. And it's Meredith Johnson, who was the other lead in the film. And he put me in contact with her. She read the sides. She was on board. So I had the two lead characters really kind of tied up and moving forward in about 72 hours in that part of it. And then there are two other major roles. Dr. Rigby, who's, for lack of a better way to say it, an antagonist or villain in the story. And I presented this short script to a friend of mine from the University of Georgia program. And that was Rebecca Artis Jackson, who's that role. She read it. She's a comedian by training and an improv actress. And she read it. And she also She's just very skilled in what she does. And she was excited about it. And then we had one more, I guess, larger role, the cast. And I had a student at Dalton State some years ago who was an actress, Candace Boone, that you know, Candace Geis is her name now, or was then, I'm sorry. But she had married and moved to the Atlanta area, but she was still, you know, and had connections here in Dalton and Chatsworth. And I always thought very highly of her, and she's a great actress, and she's got a great look, and she was a great student for me. And she had told me years ago, like, well, when you start making movies, don't forget about me. So I reached out to her, and I sent sides to her as well, and she was on board. So we had the cast in place, I guess, within maybe 8 days. And then after that, it was just securing locations, which we filmed everything on the campus at Chat State. And it didn't cost us anything to do that. And fortunately, because it was a student project, we didn't have to have insurance for the project either. The final thing after that really was just scheduling the dates, meeting with Rachel and Matt Lida, who was the assistant director, meeting with Christian and kind of getting a vision for the story the way that I saw it anyway. And we had, again, you know, a lot of the students at Chat State were filling in other roles as well, and they were getting course credit and not paid credit for it. But it all came together, and, you know, we filmed that little film just before COVID happened, and we filmed it over 4 weekends on Saturdays and Sundays at Chat State. Mm-hmm. When we had everything finished, we were working on the film at the end of each day and working on some early edits, and then COVID happened and kind of shut everything for everybody down, as everybody knows. The problem that we ran into was that all of the files, all the digital files, were housed at Chat State. So when COVID happened and they shut down campuses nationwide, we didn't have access to those files until we were coming out of COVID. So we had about 9 months or so that went. We had fortunately finished filming everything, but we had not started the true edit or the editing process. And when we didn't have access to those, it just sort of sat, and we did nothing with it until we were able to. And by that time, many of the students who had worked on it had finished their program and graduated from Chat Straight as well. So the student who was going to be the initial editor and had done a rough edit was gone. And fortunately, Christian had significant editing experience. He's made his own short films that have been very successful as well. So I ended up hiring Christian to do the edit, and was able to sit in the seat with him and kind of talk through the story. And we actually ended up with a film that looks and sounds very different than what the original starting point was on it. And that was an interesting process, just to see how two different editors were approaching the very same story. Mm-hmm. But I think that, and I don't mean it as a slight to the other student who would have been the initial editor on it, but Christian sees it differently he operates the camera, and he sees images differently because of that experience. Whereas the other young man was strictly in linear editing. He's a very good editor, but he doesn't usually see through the lens of the camera, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So their visions, we got the same story told, but the look and the tone of it was very different. And it was the original rough edit that the other young man had started on had a little bit of a darker tone to it. And I'm really glad that we had the time to kind of really think through the story. So COVID, even though it was a curse in a lot of ways, it was a blessing in more ways, that we just had that wait time to really let the story settle. And we ended up with a 30-minute film that we had. And, you know, the rest, as they say, I guess, is history. And then, you know, started, we had no distribution plan. It was just, I was going to submit to festivals, and I did. And, you know, that's a time consuming and not necessarily financially consuming. It's not tremendously expensive, but you do have to pay to submit to festivals, just like you do creative writing and other arts as well. So, you know, the initial investment of what we put into the film and making sure that people got paid the appropriate rate, for the actors and the editors and the DP and the directors, and making sure that we didn't cut corners there. I had a budget. I exceeded the budget by about $750 or so, and most of that was craft services. I I fed the cast and crew, but I didn't want to just feed pizza every day. So I want to take care of them over those days and do that. And so, you know, we went over budget a little bit, but we still produced the film that you have seen and that other people have seen for under $5,000. And we got so many good comments and positive feedback when people, it seems like every time it has been in a festival that I've been able to attend, that's one of the questions that people want to know: how much did it cost? And then when I tell them, I'm like, well, roughly, about $4,800 for that film. And they're pretty shocked that we got a first film with that quality for that.
Yes.
Because most, if you're talking about a 30-minute film, however you fund it, a lot of times it's double or triple that amount. So I'm really proud that we were efficient. I mean, it's even though we did go slightly over on making sure people got fed and paid appropriately. So,
When you said that about the 9 months, I know that I had known already that COVID got in your way there, but I did not realize it was 9 months from the filming to the editing. And I would think, that would make a big difference in the final output. I mean, you've got the same footage and the same story, but you've been able to think about it and how you use that footage would be, sounds like it came out differently.
It did. And it came out differently in a lot of ways that were very positive, but it also came out differently in the aspect that it's a great proof of concept for the feature script that I had worked on at Georgia. So it ties in, and there's a story there that kind of bridges the gap between the short film and what Ed Abbey wrote in his novel. So as Christian always says, short filmmaking is expensive practice. But John Strauss always said, if you're going to make a short film, it needs to be a proof of concept that if someone is going to give you money to make something else, you need to show them that you know what you're doing, and it needs to be of quality. So it exceeded expectations in a lot of ways, but it set us up for the next, whatever the next move is. But we actually, because of COVID and the waiting part of getting the final edit done and going through it very meticulously to make sure we didn't have, any issues with sound or color grading or continuity, which is, of course, or the other thing, we ended up not releasing it until late in 2022. So we're sort of at the 3-year mark with it now. And in that 3 years, like I said, the submission process, a lot of rejections, a lot of acceptances, and a lot of accolades for the film. And I think, again, that's just the credit to the people who worked on it. I didn't do it all by myself at all. No filmmaker does, but I think because we had that time and we didn't rush the process, that it's paid off in many ways that I don't think any of us really expected it to.
Well, I wanted to say that I'm sorry, I'm too close, that the film looks so good. It looks so professional. And a lot of times when you see indie films or whatever, they have a lighting thing going on that I don't know technically what to call it, or a sound thing, or just sort of the way the camera's moving and things like that. And this film looks so like it's supposed to.
Well, and I appreciate that. Again, that's really to Rachel and Christian's credit. Christian's very accomplished and he's pretty humble about it too, but he's made some really great short films, and I know you've seen his work, and he's got an eye for directing. He's got an eye for the camera. He's got an eye for editing, and I couldn't have been matched up with anybody, I think, better for what we did. And I'm so grateful for that relationship that I've been able to develop with Christian. They say in the business of filmmaking that you want to have your people or your crew. And he's someone that I would certainly want to work with again. And in fact, I think maybe I test his patience because he's always asking, like, what are you working on? What's next? What's next? Because he always wants to be working on film. It's just his nature as a creative artist. He really did a lot of that. And then a friend of mine who's actually been best friend since the first day of kindergarten. I've known him about 44 years, I guess, now. But Mel Pierce was the assistant camera operator. And, you know, Mel, he's a firefighter by profession here in the city of Dalton. But he does the training videos for the graduating classes through the Dalton Fire Department. And so Mel does some camera operating and editing and things, and he's got a really great eye for that as well. And he and Christian, when they met, they hit it off and could communicate in what I would consider sort of camera technical jargon. You know, Christian didn't have to ask for Mel, who was helping him, to go and get a particular lens and then explain what the lens was that he needed, because Mel had that knowledge. And so it was very seamless when it was time to change lenses and do those things. And that was just a really cool process to see them work together, but also to say, like, hey, you know, my best buddy since kindergarten, he's part of this too. And he has a lot of creative ideas and things that he works on with some other artists here in Dalton, like Adam Stanford, who's a visual artist. And it was just really, really great, you know, to have that support and really to kind of have an assistant director in Mel as well, because he and I think, not exactly alike, but we communicate our ideas well to one another because we've known one another for so many years. And if there were things that I wanted to suggest to Rachel or Matthew without overstepping my role as a producer, I didn't get in their way. Generally, when they would start rolling, I would go somewhere else on campus and eat my nerves, as they say, while they were, you know, trusting the process. But if there were certain issues that I was hearing or seeing with the way maybe a line was delivered or something that wasn't hitting a beat the way that in my head I had written it, I could communicate that with Mel and Christian, and they had a good working relationship with Rachel. So everybody worked so well together on it. We didn't have a lot of drama on set, not in the film, but just in the general sense. People got along for the most part. There's no really tense moments. There's no, you know, dramatic meltdowns. None of that Hollywood stuff that you get to hear people talking about with ugliness on the set or anything like that. So it was really cool. And like I said, the younger students at Chat State, some of them fresh out of high school, some who are actually still in high school taking the classes as dual enrollment. It was, by and large, I would say, you know, maybe 92% professional set, and everybody knew their role and showed up to do those things. And, you know, we had one or two issues on those weekends when some of the students who were also working jobs outside, as most college students do, could be there for 3 days of filming, but they couldn't be there for all the days of filming. And so sometimes that meant that people had to wear different hats that they weren't really expecting to, and some days on the spot weren't quite ready to, you know, to hold a boom mic or whatever. But, you know, Chris teaches those classes so well, and his students respect him, and they're coachable and they're teachable. So if they were a little uncertain about what they were doing, it was, I don't want to say easy, it makes it sound like it was so easy, but Chris has a way to communicate what those students need to be doing to learn the process of filmmaking and to see them execute it well. And I think that's, again, just a credit to what he does with his program. So, you know, if you came in on a Saturday and you weren't expecting to operate a boom mic, and suddenly we're like, hey, we need you to do the boom, there may be some initial nerves. That's more what I'm saying. But then, you know, they knew what to do and how to do it, and so they got acclimated to it pretty quickly. And Keith Nolan, who did the sound on those first weekends, and, you know, he kind of communicated what they needed to be doing for him to capture, you know, good sound. Mm-hmm. When we mic'd the actors, we had them mic'd, we boomed them, and then we did the shotgun mic on the camera. So we caught the audio in multiple ways. And when you're talking about some of the short films you've seen before, sometimes the lighting or the color grading can be the issue. But one of the things that Chris and Dylan had stressed so much was the importance of sound. Mm-hmm. You could make a beautiful film, but if you didn't capture the sound or the audio very well, it's hard to go back and redo that without staging and reshooting scenes. or having the actors come in and read those slides and try to record and then, you know, splice it into the film through the editing process. So we were meticulous enough about it that I think at the end of the day, we didn't have any regrets or say we could have done this, you know, exponentially better. But, you know, again, it was just having the right people in the right place and having students who were willing and able to do things to get out of their comfort zone, but to do it in a way that was giving them the training that they were going to school for anyway. So for the ones that got the academic credit, I think they had a pretty good experience and all. But yeah, it was just, it was interesting just to see how people work together on a set for a short film like that. And I can't say that my experience is exclusive or different than anybody else's because I've not been on a lot of other people's film sets. But I think that that's, if you have the right people on the project and you've communicated the ideas, it's easier to execute it the way that you need to. And you know, that I think that's what avoided some, you know, technical issues and personality issues and, you know, drama on the set as well. Everybody just was willing to pitch in and do what they needed to do. And it was not about one person doing this or that or being this or that. It was really a true team effort.
Yeah, that does say a lot for Chris Willis's program that they're not prima donnas or anything. They know they're there to work.
Yeah.
Which
they
is,
do. And they do.
Yeah. I mean, especially I always thought this was a ironic thing, but to call it the talent, you know, the people that are on camera versus the people who are as if there's less talent to the other, but people are doing the technical work and everything. It's interesting you bring this up because one of my goals was for a long time has been to have a short film class. And I finally had one this semester.
All right.
And I had to have the guy, he streams the class in from Georgia Southern. He's an accomplished filmmaker, Connor Rentz. And he's teaching, and it's a small class. And some of the kids dropped out once they realized they were going to have to work, I think. I shouldn't say.
All right.
But he's got 10 now and they are so excited. They are making their short films and, you know, one's a zombie. It just, you know, they're short. They're like 5 minutes. And a girl who's just being attacked by zombies, but she's so into her phone that she doesn't notice anything. And there's another one that's in the game room at the campus and they get into some sort of fracas. I don't know what it is, but I skimmed over the script and there's two others that are being done and it's they're so excited about it, you know, and most of them are GFA kids, but students, but in fact, I think all of them are, but it's exciting to see that. Although, you know, our campus isn't used to that kind of thing. So I've had to, deal with public safety and some other people. It's like, okay, they're not going to hurt anybody. Right. It's cartoonish violence. It's not real zombie blowing their heads off or not. But, you know, getting back to this, to the awards thing too. I mean, obviously it's winning them because it's good. I mean, by my count, you've won over 25. Is it more than that?
No, I think, the last one that was an overall award sort of had subcategories. And the one in Knoxville, the Knoxville Christian Film Festival, it was in its first year, but we submitted, there were people there that started the festival that I've gotten to know through the Chattanooga Film Guild. Anyway, you know, it's another thing too. I mean, we can talk about numbers of awards, I guess, but I think to me, before I talk about that, maybe I think the greatest reward of this film, or maybe the greatest award of the film, is that we have been able to submit a product to secular and faith-based festival and be recognized in both areas. And I think that that's one of the things I'm probably more proud of than the number of awards is just the fact that we created a story that is universal enough in its appeal and examines some truths about the way, you know, we all have been either in a situation where people have come to conclusions without all the facts about us or we've done it to other people. And though it's not overt in the sense that it's so on the nose, it was certainly written with some intentional allusions to my personal faith and view of the world as well. A lot of people have asked, you know, is it autobiographical? And it's informed by my many years of experience as a teacher, that's for sure, at both public school and college level. But it's not, quote unquote, autobiographical. But I think it is in the sense that all of us have been in a situation where we have drawn conclusions without waiting to hear, you know, all aspects of the truth. And I think it maybe as I've gotten older, that's one of the things that I've started to, you know, teach to my students is this idea of, you know, when we talk about knowing the truth about a situation, the truth's a tricky thing because to me, and I'm not talking, you know, big T universal truths, but just the general sense of the truth or the context of the situation. And for my high school students, this seems to work when we're talking about those aspects of storytelling. But, you know, the truth is sort of what we look through one window of a house and we see inside the house and we see certain aspects of it. And that's one slice of the truth of what's happening in that home, for example, that we don't have the ability to see through every window at the same time and see everything. And, you know, that was more, I think, what thematically I was trying to go for is just, you know, the danger of jumping those conclusions and saying that we own our truth or we know the truth when we really don't know everything. And sadly, we don't take the time to get to know those things. It's a lot juicier when you don't know and you can just make things up, I guess. But that to me has been a bigger award than winning those individual awards, because I think it's, again, a story that has resonated with audiences in so many different ways. Some people who have commented about how personal that story was to them because they did experience things that are similar to that. And then others who were curious, and then others who were angry after watching it because of their sense of justice when they see the film. And I think that's been the more, for me as a storyteller, the more intriguing thing is how is my storytelling affecting people? And I think that you as a writer, you know that you want to move your audience. And when you do that, it's a great enough award or reward in and of itself. But to get back to the numbers of things, we have, from everything from lighting to sound, the production design, to the DP work, to the directing, and then in this last one in Knoxville, we ran the table on every category in the short film. Every actor, all the four, you know, main actors, one individual for lead and supporting. But then I was really proud that it's the first festival that has had the category that I've submitted to for ensemble cast for those other actors, particularly in the classroom scene where, you know, they're not extras per se, but they get the students who get the one or two lines in the scene, that they were recognized for it because, you know, many of them, Sam and Giacomo, who's in that scene, they're aspiring actors themselves and comedians and filmmakers. And I just think that's one of my favorite scenes in the story. There's some tension that exists there because of the nature of the relationship and the beginning of that accusation. And then for those students who were acting in that film to get to deliver those lines and really hit the notes that we were going for, it was really cool just to see them get recognized for that too. So, you know, it's been an all over, you know, kind of great experience. And yeah, I mean, 25 times on paper, but like I said, if you look at every subcategory, I guess it's, I don't know, 29 or 30 or so. But, you know, I don't mean it in a nonchalant way, but it's like who's counting. I'm just proud that people are still wanting to have it in their festivals and that they're, you know, wanting to show it to people. And as, you know, anybody, whether you're publishing a novel as you do, or if you're making a film, you know, you don't put it out there into the universe, so to speak, for it not to be seen or heard. You want people to see it. You want people to hear it. And they have, and that's been really great. But it's time to move on to the next project. I think we've exhausted that resource at this point.
Okay. So you don't see that plan to send it to any other film festivals?
No, the one in Knoxville, and you know, I may have submitted to too many festivals. I don't know, but if it seemed to fit, I submitted it to the festivals. But the one in Knoxville, we were encouraged to submit to that one, and we did. Like I said, it's the Knoxville International Christian Film Festival. And then the one prior to that was, it was actually a what they call a Women's Filmmaker Festival, which is an interesting name because it's so broad that it was just the Women's International Film Festival. I don't know why it wasn't women's, but that was just the name of the festival anyway. And the criteria for how my film kind of fit the category was that it had to have a majority female cast, and it had to be either written, produced, or directed by a female filmmaker, which it was with Rachel. And so I said, hey, I think we qualify. And I sent it in. And that little film won an award at the Women's Film Festival, or the Women's Film Festival. And Rachel was recognized for that. And Meredith was recognized for her acting there, too. So again, you know, the universal appeal of it, whether it's a secular, faith-based, or, you know, a women's specific film festival or whatever, it's done well. It has exceeded its expectations, and it has run its legs off, I think, at this point. But I think it's done. And, you know, Christian teases me a little bit. He's like, man, that thing just keeps on winning. I'm like, well, you know, if you keep on submitting, things are bound to happen. But you get to a point where you don't want to submit it so many times that it's it gets tired or obnoxious either. And I'm probably that point where if we keep doing it, people are like, okay, you're a one-trick pony at this point. You got to do something else. But, what have you done for me lately? And Christian, it's time to move on. And
so what are you moving on to?
Well, you know, I've got a few things. Feature film, of course, is where I really kind of want to move into things. And so, you know, the teaching takes up a lot of time, and other life factors, you know, consume a lot of time as well. But, you know, working on some other short ideas with Mel, who I referenced earlier, and his friend Adam, to work on kind of a short horror film that's written, but we haven't started pre-production on it yet. It's more of a seasonal thing, so we're probably going to look at the fall. I think I've bent the arm enough to say we got to get this thing moving. If we're going to ride it, we can't just let it sit here and do nothing. There's another short film that Christian and I have talked about. I'm reworking the screenplay on that one, but it's one that deals with veterans issues and PTSD. And it's a story that is kind of coming out of another idea that I had that's not quite a feature. And so I'm working on those themes and, you know, working on a few feature scripts, always reading and trying to consume more about the filmmaking process as well. The feature film that I wrote as my thesis at the University of Georgia, I've had conversations with Mr. Abbey's family at this point, with his son and the widow who has the rights to the novel. But that's been an interesting process. I've built those relationships, but because I'm not yet established in the industry, the widow is a little reluctant to have those conversations at this point. But it's a slow sort of glacial thing, but I have every confidence at some point in my life that film will be made. But there's a history there. Some of Ed's novels have been made into really great films, and then there were one or two where you know, just there were some legal issues with you know, securing rights the proper way and things like that. So, you know, knowing that there's a history there, I'm just trying to approach it with, you know, an earnest heart and an honest rationale for why that story matters to me. But you can't rush a process. And, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then, okay, I've got other ideas that I need to be working on at the same time. And then as a poet, which you know that I've written poetry before, and I've kind of decided I want to recover that body as well. And I've been going through, you know, just poems and a manuscript that I'd worked on for the longest time when I was at Dalton State, and then, you know, focusing on tenure and promotion that took a back seat at that time to get those binders and things together, lots of binders. But, you know, the poetry, you know, I had some success there early on when I was at Kennesaw State. I had, you know, great mentors there, like Ralph Wilson, who was my poetry professor, and Linda Neiman, who was my creative nonfiction professor. And there's, I guess, a part of me, you know, I'm as I tell my students now, I'm half a century old. I hope to live to be 102 or so, but, you know, I want to be a sound mind and sound body, but, time's a wasting and, you know, you can't just write and create and do nothing with it. And I think that's one of the things that, there's maybe more of a sense of urgency now than there was when I was in, you know, my 30s and moving into my 40s or so, because I know that I can do the good work and put those words out there on the page or put those poems or films out there for an audience. But, you know, at the same time, you have to be practical and maybe pragmatic about, you know, I'm an educator first. And that's been my primary calling, and I'm happy for that. Right now, I guess I'm technically 2 years away from quote unquote retirement. But I think just a lot of things are shifting at this point in my professional life. And, there are other things I just want to do, and it's time to get moving on doing them. And even to the point that I have, that I've spoken with you about, even, you know, considering maybe finishing a doctoral, you know, program as well. So there's always kind of something cooking, but, you know, you can't overcook it and all, you know, those poems and other film ideas and screenplay ideas. I think it's the challenge to many working writers who are working in a field that isn't creative writing. As you know, you have to sit down, you have to be disciplined enough to chop out pages and, you know, make the appearances and take the meetings and things. And that's always a challenge. But at the same time, I also know over 28 years of teaching at the college and the high school level that I've mentored a lot of creative students here who are pursuing film. Several of them are Dalton State students who are working in the film industry. Many years ago when I was at Lafayette High School, and my students pursued a poetry scholarship at Berry College, and she's published several books at this point. And also, it may look at times like I'm not doing my own creative work, but also know that as an educator, you have the benefit for those who really get invested and passionate about the arts. But there's a lot of encouragement. And so if you see your success through the other people that you invest in, I think I've always been working on something creative, and it may have benefited other people more than me at times, but that's okay too. I think, you know, as a teacher, as an educator, that's your primary calling. You want to leave the fire better than you found it. And, you know, you want to hopefully have a ripple effect that endures in a positive way. But at the same time, you know, I still have that creative urge to leave my mark as a creator as well. And I did say, you know, some years ago when we were filming that little film, I said, you know, if this is the only film I ever make, I want to be proud of it. I want it to be a good film. But I also really didn't mean that's the only film I wanted to make, you know. So there's that trade-off too. But if it ends up, you know, if I'm not here tomorrow and that's the only film I ever got to make, then I'm proud of it. But if the poems and other stories that I publish, you know, are the only ones I ever publish, I'm proud of those too. But the sense of urgency, not as an act of desperation, but just that positive restlessness that comes along with creating, it's really time for me, especially as I transition into the next phases of what, you know, life becomes, that I think that, you know, in my mind, I feel like I'm more ready than I have been to do those things, if that makes sense.
Well, one thing I was going to end on was that, you know, I'm nominated for a literary award. And
congratulations on that. I saw that as well.
And yeah, I still think it's a fluke, but whatever. And you know, you would think that it would, it's good because it's made me realize, okay, I do know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I'm not, right now I'm having a real hard time writing. I haven't written much fiction at all. I've submitted something to a literary journal, but it just seems life is very, so much going on right now. But do you believe that awards motivate or demotivate? Or is that just a dumb question?
No, I don't think it's a dumb question at all. I mean, I can obviously speak for myself that I think that it validates a lot of what you do as a creator in any creative field. I don't, you know, for an actor on a stage, I think you desire that feedback from an audience and you want it to be positive feedback. You want to be able to make a curtain call and hear that applause. But, you know, not too long ago, I went to see a comedian in Chattanooga, Gabriel Iglesias, you know, Fluffy, if you know him as a comedian. And I had just taken myself there and he was talking at one point of the show, just being vulnerable, you know, as a comedian on the stage. And he said, you know, I love the applause. Please keep it up. That he said, you know, what you don't realize, and he was just speaking to us as an audience, he said, and what you people don't realize, though, when we go behind the curtain and that curtain closes, it gets really quiet and really lonely. And I think that it's a balance for me that if you're pursuing what you're doing with a passion, the recognition should naturally come. If you're, you know, relatively good at what you do, or you're trained enough to do it. But I think the danger is if you live just for the highs, those low moments can get really quiet, and you start getting that narrator in your head sometimes that tells you you're never going to make it. I mean, you know, how many times could I say to myself, well, Ryan, you're 50, you haven't done it yet, so what gives you any belief that you're going to? But I think that those little victories and those secret anniversaries that you keep to celebrate your success and to see just how far you've come, you have to keep a perspective on it. But I also think that's true in the classroom. And I see that a lot, of course, with the students I have in the high school. A term that a professor of mine used to use was those students who are grade grubbers. And they, you know, they live for that A. And if they don't make it, they really get in their head space about I'm not worthy or whatever. And you know, you try to assure kids like, hey, you're more than a letter, you're more than a grade. And I think that's just a perspective you really need to have in life in general, but certainly the creative part of it. I didn't make the film, since that's primarily what we're talking about. I didn't make the film to win awards. I was fortunate enough to make an award-winning film. It was to involve people in a process and produce a good product that told a story that connected with people and made them think and respond to it. So even if we didn't have, you know, 25 or so quote unquote awards, just sitting in an audience in the back row and watching people respond to it, that's the applause, that's that moment. Like, you know, people see it and, you know, people like it. But I don't think you ever should maybe equivocate that to they like me. They really like me. The other thing I've learned in life, in personal relationships and professional relationships and in the classroom too, you're always going to have people that do like you and appreciate what you do, but you're still going to have those negative naysayers who, you know, no matter what you do, is never going to be enough. And I guess I'm just not the type of person. I like positive feedback. And I like words of affirmation. It's one of those things that I know about myself. And if you get into talking about love languages and all those things, I know in relationships, that's me too. But I think that I love stories enough to want to tell them and have people react to them. Similar to the way, you know, Jerry Dry in the department, you know, you want to be able to deliver the joke and get the laugh. You know? But I think that there are so many creative people as artists in different, you know, genres, including filmmaking, who they feel that they're not validated if they don't get those accolades. And they sometimes, I think, take the occasion to write to the reward or the award and not sometimes make a great product that stands test of time. And that's one of the things I would like to say. If I look back at that short film, if I look back at Elation, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, am I still going to be proud of it? And I would say now, I think, yes, I would look back at it and say, hey, for a first time attempt at filmmaking, that's pretty good. But again, you know, as I talked about with the relationships, seeing people work together on it on the set, seeing audiences react to it, family and friends react to it, professional friends and mentors, you know, like yourself, respond to it. It's been a fun journey, and I think it keeps you humble in a way that that it should. You know, I think you have the highs and the lows, but you know, like the old poem says, we're constantly risking absurdity when we put ourselves out there for the world to see anyway. I do that every day in the classroom. It's always performance art. So, you know, maybe that's not the answer you hoped for, but I mean, that's the answer.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I think it's a good place to end. Is that Ferlinghetti who says the?
I think so.
Perfect. Yeah. So we ended on a high note, I guess.
Yeah. Or high wire, one or the other.
Yeah, high wire. Okay.
But it's been a great process, and I really appreciate all that you've done to support me in the classroom, but also in the creative arts. And I know you're getting close to your retirement. If that's not been announced on the podcast or not, you put your years in the business and keep doing those things. But it has been much appreciated, and I'm humbled that you even asked me again to kind of say words that maybe someone out there listening, you know, can say, hey, that's helpful, or, you know, maybe just turn their nose up at it and say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about at all, which could be true on a given day. But it's been a fun adventure, and I'm looking, you know, forward to what we're doing next. And, you know, Christian's getting ready to release another film, and Emily Steele that you've met, she's working on a new film too. So being part of that and just, you know, giving feedback and helping other artists create what they're doing and how let's do it. That's a pretty awesome place to be too.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us tonight, Ryan. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
And we'll see you soon. Thank you.
So this is the addendum. Just want to remind you that you can find out more about my books and me and where I will be for speaking and things of that sort at my website, BarbaraGrahamTucker.net. That will link you to where you can buy my books, either from me or from a bookseller, and give you some more information, as well as a blog where I write about writing and creativity. Hope you'll visit. Bye-bye.